Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49. Membership information available at club49hub.com. From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Thursday, September 4th, 2025. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunathchi, Shawa, Toksiknusum, Salama. Thank you so much for joining the conversation. You can also join us via our live stream for behind-the-scenes look at what's going on here in the studio on YouTube at ktoo.org/JPMLive or on KTOO's Instagram and Facebook pages. Conversations coming up this hour. We talk age-friendly housing with the Juno Commission on Aging. We chat with Jen from the Juno Public Libraries for an update on events happening this September. And we begin today with making sausage. And the sausage we are referring to is sometimes the spicy kind, the law. I'm joined now in the studio by Jim Duncan, who made a 45-year career in public service here in Alaska through the Juno Assembly, the State House, the State Senate, and finally serving as the Executive Director of the Alaska Employees Association until his retirement in 2017. However, he hasn't slowed down any, and he has now published a book about his life and work called Making Sausage, From Illinois Farm to a 45-Year Career in Public Service in Alaska, and he is in Juneau for a book signing event on Friday, September 5th, that's tomorrow, at Hearthside Books, at the location in the Merchant's Wharf down there on Marine Way, from 4:30 to 7 as part of the First Friday celebrations. Jim's also joined in the studio by his lovely bride, Shannon. Welcome, Gunathchi, Sha'iadi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you both with us in the studio. Wasiati, Jim, how are you?
I'm doing just fine, thank you.
Excellent.
Always glad to be in Juneau when it's nice and sunny like this. This is normal, though, now, I guess. Huh?
Thanks for, normal for the last maybe week or so. the beginning of the summer, not so much.
It's been great weather for us.
It's been some good stuff around here. You make your way in Anchorage now. That's where you live?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, you went up there to work for
I took the job as executive director of the State Employees Association. That job was located in Anchorage, so I was required to go there.
Yeah.
Didn't intend to work more than 3 years or so, but it ended up 15 years. And then I retired in 2017. And meanwhile, I had met Shannon, and we had gotten married. So I'm now an Anchorage resident. But Juneau's still my home.
Juno's still home, still has your heart, right?
Yeah.
Still has your heart. Well, it's great to have you back. It's great to be hosting you here this Friday, tomorrow again, 4:30 to 7 over there at Hearthside Books, signing this book, Making a Sausage. So I'm curious, what drew you to writing the book?
Well, it was what's happening in the state and federal level today. And more I thought about it, and more I got concerned about what was going on, and in fact, upset about it, I would be complaining about it. And on our afternoon walks, I'd be talking about it to Shannon, and she finally said, maybe you, instead of just talking, why don't you do some writing? Don't think she meant that I should sit down and write a book. But once I got started, I found it enjoyable. I found, of course, and I think if you look at the chapters in the book or the topics in the book, that the issues that I worked on when I was in the legislature are still alive today, not only on the state level, but on the federal level. So, it's not time to say I've done the job, right? I wanted to go back and revisit that and hopefully bring it to the attention of folks who are presently serving and people who are really active. As I say in the introduction, it's about history, but it's not ancient history, because what I did, starting 50 years ago, or 45 years ago, is still current today.
Yeah, it's still happening. It's interesting. You have the permanent fund in here, Alaska's Mental Health Trust, healthcare in Alaska, senior citizens, all the topics that are still going. And I remember near the beginning of the book, you even talk about sort of your first experience getting into politics, joining the assembly, and part of the reason was drugs in Juneau, and that problem hasn't gone away either.
Yeah, 50 years on, right?
So,
that's right.
Pretty maybe a different kind of drug.
I think surely a different kind of drug.
But the same issue, right?
Still a major issue. That's correct.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit. We'll talk about some of the issues, but I want to talk about the process of writing this book. So, because of course you're writing laws, and of course I have to read the tag here because I think you're famous for this message here. Laws are like sausages. It is best not to see them being made. We'll talk a little bit about that. But in terms of writing a book, was it like making sausage? How did you get going on this? What were the first steps?
Yeah, it was quite a process. The first step was just to sit there and do some thinking about what topics I wanted to be talking about and how they related to current day. Mm-hmm. And then I did a whole lot of research. And I thank the staff that I had in the legislature and elsewhere for putting together good files. And I have like 20 boxes in my garage of legislative files.
So
I started off by going through those and finding the back material I had and refreshing my memory. And then, laid out the order I thought it should be addressed in and began writing. And what I tried to do, because I think sometimes people wonder, is this really what happened? I tried, when I was talking about important issues and what I stood for those days or what I worked on, to tie it back to a newspaper article or to a speech I had made or to something that would verify that, yes, these are issues we worked on, what my position was, and where we are today. So
something on the public record to verify, Did you also, because I know you give a lot of thanks at the beginning of the book, did you reach out to people and say, did you get some details from different people along the way?
No, I did not. I actually, in my den, or my, I guess, little man cave, whatever you want to call it, I did all the writing myself and all the research myself. And, Shannon would review it after I'd written two or three chapters, but I didn't. In fact, no one knew I was doing this until even my own family until I was almost done. Other than Shannon, I just kept it very, very close. Because I wasn't sure, how far I was going to go. Was I going to make it? And because it's quite a process, and it took, 2.5-3 years to get it all done. And I would write and then read what I wrote, and that doesn't do it, and go back and correct. So it took a while.
And now, did you self-publish the book?
I did, yeah. It's on Amazon. You can self-publish there, yes.
You self-published on Amazon. Did you think about going through a publisher, or was it just as easy through Amazon?
It was just as easy to do self-publishing. I didn't think about going through a publisher. I wasn't sure I'd find a publisher interested in doing that for me. So I thought, well, let me get it out there and see what happens.
I don't know. I think it's so interesting because we often have – historical records or voices from the past, right? But it's so nice to have something that's, this is covering the 70s, 80s, 90s, the early 2000s, right? So it's like it's that period of history where often we're studying stuff that's before. But like you're saying, we're repeating some of the same issues. Some of the same things are coming up. And we can learn from perhaps the stuff that you were doing in your time.
What happened before? What steps we took? And clearly, I think I tried to be as straightforward as possible in the book. We were successful in some areas. Other areas, we were failures, and I admit that. We just didn't get the job done. In education, for example, oil taxation, putting together a fiscal plan for the state of Alaska. All those issues are still out there, and they're major issues today. And then permanent fund dividend.
Yeah.
The issues don't go away, and even on the federal level, education is being attacked on the federal level. The Department of Education is being decimated, and there's a different approach to education there. And of course, with a lot of the public services that government provides, so it's really relative, I think, what's happening today and what happened back in those days.
Who are you hoping reads this book?
Well, I hope as many people as possible, of course. But clearly, I hope that the people who are involved in state government in Alaska would read it, because it's a book that I try to lay out the statewide issues that impacts everybody in Alaska. And I talk, several places specifically about how it affects Juneau and what I did for Juneau in the legislature. So it's a mix of local policies and projects and statewide. So I hope anybody involved in state government, whether they're elected or appointed or just people who are interested in what state government is doing, would find this worth reading and, yeah, and familiarize themselves with what happened in the past. You know, what I find, and, you know, I was beginning to see that when I left the legislature. I last served in 1998 was my last session. And what I was finding was that the new people who were being elected just didn't have the background, the history of Alaska. They didn't understand how these issues developed or why they developed and what should be done. So if that was true 25 years ago when I left the legislature, it's surely true today. We got a whole bunch of new people serving who weren't here at statehood. Like when I first started, many of the people were here at statehood, and I learned from them. But we've got a lot of people who are newcomers to Alaska, so to speak, and they don't have the background or the history of what happened or understand the issues and how they came about. So I'm hopeful that it will have some influence on those people who are new to Alaska, whether they're an elected office or not. I hope that they will find it interesting and have a better understanding of how the issues developed and why they need to be addressed.
You keep your last title that you had, right? So do people, is it proper to say Senator Jim Duncan?
They do.
Because you were assemblyman, you were representative, but you were a senator, so you would say Senator, former Senator Jim Duncan.
Many of them who know me will call me Senator. Some of them call me SOB, but you know they do recognize.
Officially, they call you Senator.
Officially.
So that's so curious to me because you served in so many different areas. I want to go back to where did the interest in public service start? Was it even before you got onto the assembly? I know you tell that story a little bit, but I'm wondering in your childhood or from your parental influence or your surroundings, like what inspired you to sort of be thinking in this way?
Well, I think my growing up on the farm had a lot to do with that in the rural setting. Mm. As I say in the book, I can recall listening with mom and dad to the Democratic Convention when JFK was going to run for vice president, wanted to be vice president, and he gave a speech on the floor. He didn't get chosen to be vice president. Kefauver did. But I remember that, and that got me involved in politics, or got me involved in thinking politically. And I thought, of course, my parents were Democrat. The rest of their families happened to be Republican. I don't know how they got out of the mainstream, but they did, thank God. And then just working, as I worked on the farm, which I did for many years, I saw, for example, that there were many people who had a whole lot. I thought I had a tough life, but there were people who had things a lot tougher. Mm. And I think that influenced my decision-making through the legislative process, right? We need to try to be putting together programs and services that will help people and not be looking down on them, but be helping to pull them up if we can. So then I was involved in high school elected office,
student
office.
Government?
So, yeah, okay. So I always had an interest. And, I always thought I might run for office. I wasn't sure how or when. But when I came to Juneau, I was first in Sitka for several years and got involved in Democratic politics over there, supporting candidates and so on. But when I came to Juneau, the opportunity arose to run for the assembly. I was spurred to do that because of what I recount in the book, that I went to a fundraising luncheon that I couldn't get into.
So. Right. You had four kids and fifth on the way, you say in the book.
Yeah.
You're listening to Juneau Afternoon. We're talking with retired Senator Jim Duncan about his book, Making Sausage from Illinois Farm to a 45-Year Career in Public Service in Alaska. He's going to be at Hearthside Books tomorrow down on the Merchant's Wharf downtown from 4 to 7:30, signing books, talking to folks about the book. It's self-published. You can go and meet him in person there. And Jim, the interesting thing too is that, you know, you talk a lot about politics in here, but we were just mentioning, you know, family. You had four kids, a fifth on the way when you first got involved. You couldn't afford the $35 dinner back in 1971 or whatever it was. And you do go into some personal stories in here. You do talk about the tragic loss of your first wife. And you were actually down here at the time.
That's correct.
Can you tell a little bit about that story?
Yeah, actually,
that
was, that was Charlotte, my second wife.
Oh, second wife, okay.
Yes, I was here working for the union. I was bargaining contracts, and I was a chief negotiator, and she became ill, and I was notified, and by the time I got on the plane, I'd gotten a call from the doctor saying that she had passed away.
Yeah.
So, you know, I wasn't prepared for that. That was quite a shock.
And, yeah. It was unknown heart issues, right?
That
you didn't even,
because
it was interesting the way you tell in the book. I was right there with you because, like, you talk about you get a phone call and the doctor's like, oh, it's okay. Everything's going to be fine. And then just a little bit later, you're like, no, they call you back and say, you better get here ASAP. And then you don't even get to boarding and you get the call that,
right.
And he's like, there's no other way to say it, but she didn't make it.
Yeah.
That just sounds impossible because you're so far away, right?
And there was nothing I could do. Get on the plane and fly as quick as you can.
Yeah.
And, you know, fortunately, I tried to call the kids let them know, or I called one or two of them, and then they called the others. And, there were people on the plane listening to me making those calls, and the fellow sitting next to me said, if I could help you, let me know.
Mm.
He says, I've gone through some things too. So, you know, I had a lot of support, and I got off the plane in Anchorage. My daughter Desiree was there, and my wife's family was in Anchorage. So it was a difficult process, and, you know, you get through those things. There's one point in the book where I say, you know, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, but you got to get back up and keep moving forward. That's the way life is, and you just can't stand still. So
it's nice that you weave the personal, into what drives you in terms of what your policy making, and then you met this lovely bride.
Yes.
Little bit later, how did you meet Shannon?
Well, we at a reception.
You talk about that in the book too. I just want people to know.
At a reception, and. We've been married 10 years now. Sometimes I have to check to be sure that's the correct number, but it is. I met her in 2012, and we got married in 2015.
Wow.
In Oregon. My son John was my best man, and her daughters, Carly and Nicole, stood up with her, and it was a nice family wedding at her brother's.
Oh, that's so excellent.
And we've enjoyed retired life, do a lot of traveling.
And once he stops, right? Yeah, he never stops.
Enjoyed the retirement part of it. I missed the working part of life.
The blood still boils because that's what made you write the book, right?
Yes,
so you read the paper, you hear the news, you're like, what are they doing down there?
Well, yeah, you hear what's happening with education funding or what's happening as far as certain programs go, and the fact that they're still struggling or putting together a financial plan because they're concerned about, and they can't do it until they bring in more revenues, and they're concerned about taxing the oil companies anymore, which to me is just doesn't make sense. I mean, we don't have a fair oil taxation policy now. We did in 1981, and that's why I was removed from speakership, is because those who wanted to change oil tax to be more in favor of the companies got together and they voted me out.
I was going to ask you about that in terms of you're the only person ever to be removed. Is that right?
During a legislative session, that's correct. In Alaska, I may be the only one nationwide for all I know. I mean, federal level, they got rid of a couple of their speakers.
But it didn't stop. You went on 17 more years.
I did.
Yeah, okay.
I decided when that happened that, some people said, well, he's done. He'll never run again or he won't file again. And my response was, I'll let my constituents decide that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I stood for the next election, got 65% of the vote. And I found that my constituents thought, despite that happening to me, I was doing a good job for what they hired me for.
Yeah.
I was representing them well. So I moved forward for 17 more years. Ended my career, elected office in 98. Decided to run against Don Young for Congress, and I knew it was an uphill battle, but I had I'd always had the itch, and as I say in the book, I didn't want to find myself sitting on a swing on the front porch when I'm maybe two or three.
Not that you say you didn't try.
Why didn't you try?
Yeah, at least giving it a shot, he was a tough man to beat.
He never did get beat. Yeah, exactly.
Of course, you tell all these stories about getting removed from office, all the different journeys you've had along the way in this book, Making Sausage from Illinois Farm to a 45-year career in public service in Alaska. Have you ever had the urge since 1998? Did you ever have the thought of running back in for the state legislature?
No, never did. After I get out of the legislature, then I went to work for Noel's administration and was commissioner of administration for 2.5 years.
Yeah.
So I was involved from that level. Then I was going to retire for good, but then the union forced me to, I say forced, but they kept after me till I finally agreed to take the job.
Okay, so
I never wanted to run for office again.
Never wanted. Okay, that's good. You can enjoy life probably. What's so messy about making laws, or what is it that people don't understand about, you know, making a law? You talk about that idea that, you know, you don't want to see how it's made. What's so messy about it?
Well, a lot of people don't want. You have to compromise to make. Mm-hmm. To make good laws, right? You put a bill in, you're probably not going to get it in word for word, and certain ideas are going to go away. So you have to have the give and the take. You got to take the good with the bad and get that balance, just like in making sausage. You got to find the proper ingredients, right?
Mm.
So you put the proper ingredients in that bill that you know will get it through. Now, there may be cases where I didn't like everything that was in a piece of legislation that I finally got through, but it was necessary in order to get the good parts of it passed into law. So, and then they don't see, but they hear about the wheeling and the dealing and the give and the take and the bargaining that goes on. That the public doesn't necessarily like nor understand, and that's the sausage making process. And,
right.
And I hope I can give people a better understanding of it's compromising. It's got to be done. And the bottom line is you take the bad with the good. But if it gets too bad, you just say, fine, and walk away. You can't be so tied to an idea that you're going to pass bad legislation just to get your name on it. And,
right.
And I did that several times where I just said, no, can't go that way.
Can't go. You, the breaking point comes breaking at some point, right, where you say,
but it gets
okay.
pretty messy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the coup that removed me from office is a good example of that.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of wheeling and dealing and I don't know if I want to use the term or not, but backstabbing that went on in that case, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the public probably never understood all that happened there or why. But I laid out pretty succinctly there, and the outcome of it, unfortunately, the outcome, you know, removed me from office, but the real problem was it decreased the revenues to save Alaska tremendously by billions of dollars. And I just think if we would have had those revenues today, we could have a permanent fund dividend that's growing instead of getting smaller, and we could solve a lot of our problems.
Absolutely. Retired Senator Jim Duncan, his book, Making Sausage from Illinois Farm to a 45-Year Career in Public Service in Alaska. Fascinating tales in here. It's such a long time to have stories and the different journeys along the way. You can meet Jim tomorrow at Hearthside Books downtown in the Merchants Wharf. He's going to be there from 4:30 to 7 p.m. signing the books. It's self-published, and it has a lot of great stories. Senator and Shannon, thank you so much for coming in and sharing these stories with us. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much for having us. I appreciate it, too.
Best of luck to you.
Thank you.
Coming up next is Tongass Voices, a series from KTO sharing perspectives from the homelands of the Occoquan and beyond. Juneau's cat population has been growing out of control for the last few years. Juneau Animal Rescue relies on fosters to help with litters of kittens that people find around town, under buildings and porches. Tara Thornton is one of JAR's fosters. She regularly has one or two litters of kittens with or without a nursing mom. Thornton has a passion for caring for these cats, but she says sometimes it's a bit hard to give them back.
My goal is to never cry at JAR. It's okay to cry once you get in the car after you give them back. That's my rule for myself. No crying in JAR. No crying before you drop them off. You always give them forehead kisses and snuggles before you drop them off and realize like you're doing an amazing service for their lives and you're contributing to their success and them finding loving homes and letting yourself then cry it out that evening, maybe get some pizza and ice cream, you know? I'm Tara Thornton. I foster kittens for Juneau Animal Rescue, and it's an amazing thing to contribute to the community and also just so fun to interact with kittens and watch them grow and develop into cats. My history of fostering kittens, my mom went to school for zoology, and all I can remember is she always had rescues. Like, I grew up with rescues in the house. She was always taking in injured animals, specifically cats. Like, she's definitely a cat lover, so I have lots of memories of being in like a Walmart parking lot in the bushes trying to capture kittens as a little kid. something that's so important to me is contributing to the community and protecting the cats, as many as I can, without letting it overtake my life. Like, this is the, I'm trying to focus on, like, this is the part I can contribute to, is the fostering. I can't fix all the problems and go out there and spay and neuter everyone's cats for them. But I can focus on keeping the babies alive and getting them to the point where they can be adopted by the public. Juno Animal Rescue is amazing to partner with. I love fostering for them. I feel so supported. I can text or call with any questions. They provide food and litter, wet food, dry food and litter, and just their amazing group of people that are just so compassionate. Anytime I go in there for checkups, and they're excited to see the babies as they get older and less spicy. And so it really feels like it's a good team. If anyone that has been thinking about adopting or fostering, now is the time to act on that, because JAR has so many cats within their care, and all their regular cat fosters have multiple litters that they're taking care of right now. So there's only so many of us. So we really do need help for anybody who's even been curious and thinking about it, to, you know, volunteer time, resources, money, whatever you can do, your home if you can. You can let JAR know your level of experience and comfortability and that you're new, and get into it that way. And maybe take a senior cat, a little bit lower responsibility, or like less time responsibility, but still really needed. Because I can't take on three adult cats that need medication every day, along with my two litters. And I'm sure the other kitten fosters are in the same boat. So we would really need a house that could take one cat that needs medication every day, or one house that could take a bonded senior pair of cats until they can be adopted. So any help is needed and very much so appreciated.
That was Tara Thornton for this week's Tongass Voices. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. Listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. You can also join us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, or Instagram pages. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. As we all know, housing in Juno is a challenge. Age-friendly housing amplifies the challenge for those needing support in the ways that things are laid out, constructed, or accessed. I'm here with Deborah Craig and Linda Kruger from the Juno Commission on Aging to chat about the challenges and opportunities in support of age-friendly housing and maybe some other things. Gunath Cheesh, how are you today? Wasiti, Deborah.
Thank you. Well, maybe we will stay on track
Hi, Linda.
Hi there. Yeah, well, you kind of flipped the agenda on us, because we were going to talk about housing last, and we're going to do that.
I only go by what Deborah sends me in the email.
We'll let Deborah go first.
We have so many things going on with the Juno Commission on Aging, and so I apologize for not adding these other things. As you know, Boston, the Juno Commission on Aging has three priorities. One is senior wellness and recreation. And so we like to announce things that are happening in the community. The Catholic Community Services is going to resume their Level 1 Tai Chi program in October through December on Tuesdays and Thursdays. You can also go on Zoom or live at the Cathedral of the Nativity. And again, that starts in October. So just keep it in the back of your mind or put it on your calendar that when October rolls around, you have the option to take Tai Chi with Catholic Community Services. CBJ Parks and Rec we are so thrilled to announce is hosting Open Pickleball in the Floyd Dryden Gym on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, starting on September 3rd. We are absolutely thrilled about this. We've been advocating for it for quite some time. Players of all ages and skill levels are welcome. The admission's only $5. Equipment is provided. And we're also looking forward to the Marie Drake Gym potentially opening hopefully in October with Monday, Wednesday, Friday pickleball and Tuesday, Thursday open gym. So we're really excited that all these opportunities are available for seniors to be healthy and well and recreate.
Yeah, you mentioned last time that we were talking about Floyd Dryden maybe potentially opening up. So I'm glad that it happened. That's really
cool. It has happened.
That's cool.
Yeah. And so for people that are pickleballers, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 12:30 to 3:30 at Floyd Dryden Gym. And then we will announce again next month when Marie Drake opens. Our second priority is age-friendly community planning. And we wanted to acknowledge, I mean, we've talked about the age-friendly community plan in the past, but Bartlett Regional Hospital was recently accepted for level one age-friendly healthcare systems, which means they're focusing on what they call the four M's: mentation, medication, mobility, and what matters. They've already rolled out two of these four, and this fall they're going to roll out the last two. And after successful implementation, Bartlett will apply for level two designations. So we really want to acknowledge and congratulate this great community partner for recognizing the importance and value of age-friendly parameters for our community. So kudos to Bartlett Regional Hospital.
Yeah.
Our third priority, age-friendly housing. Linda, I'm going to let you take it away.
Okay, so some of you may have participated in our Zoom kind of housing forum that we had, I guess, 2 weeks ago now. Mm-hmm. And we were really fortunate. Scott Chambor, from the planning manager from the Community Development Department with CBJ, gave an amazing overview of housing in Juneau and talked about the 2016 Housing Action Plan and how it encourages housing development. And we want to create housing and streamline permitting. And they're doing all those things. And right now they are streamlining the permitting. They're installing a new software program that will enable people to do a whole lot of permitting stuff from home, from their home computers.
Oh.
And so expect that to make permitting for different kinds of permits that you need for construction and that kind of thing a little easier. You may be aware that the comprehensive plan update is underway. There have been several community and neighborhood meetings. Watch for that or go on the CBJ website, planning department website, and look for when there might be a plan update meeting in your area so you can comment on the plan update. They're also doing a land use code update, which is Title 49, and that also includes housing focus. Mm. So CBJ has a lot of balls in the air, and a lot of it has to do with housing. The Affordable Housing Fund Round 5 recently closed. And that included $2.5 million for development of affordable housing. And I understand there were seven applicants. And so we can expect to see something, a rollout of that. And the whole idea is diversify and increase a better supply of housing. So we want diversity, and we want more available housing that's affordable and accessible. And one of the things they also have is accessory dwelling units, which we talked about on the Zoom that we did, the webinar that we did, and they have a grant program. CBJ has a grant program. So if you're interested in developing an accessory dwelling unit, so that's like would be like a little house on your lot with your bigger house. They have a program there for that. CBJ has a program for that.
Oh, they can. What do? They give you some funds to be able to try to make a little make it accessible.
Yeah, well, like a mother-in-law house or
right,
you know whatever. If you have family members or something and they want their own little space, then you can develop a little accessory dwelling. They're called
encouraging building houses.
Yeah.
And thinking not just necessarily in terms of the big single-family home, but these ADUs are so you can bring a family member or rent it out to a single person. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different ways that you can use an ADU.
I'm curious at the Zoom meeting that you had, because it was all about age-friendly housing.
Right.
What were some of the big challenges that people brought up that were you know, issues for them?
Well, here in Juneau, one of the big ones is our topography, because for age 20 housing, you don't want to have lots of stairs to go in and out of your house, or multi-level living facility that doesn't have an elevator. And those are both challenges in Juneau. And so one of the things we looked at was, what are the kinds of ways you can adapt where you can build a house where you can have an entryway without a whole lot of stairs? So that's one of the things we talked about. Wider doorways, like inside the house, wider doorways, so that potentially a wheelchair could not only get through the doorway, but maneuver around any built-in cabinets or furniture, that kind of thing.
Sure.
And low barrier or no barrier showers. Again, thinking about a wheelchair rolling in or someone being able to get in without a big lip on the shower
Over. That is a big one, I think, right? Because you don't think about, like, even for me, I'm a tall man, and sometimes even me getting into a bathtub, you have to take that giant step, and then you think, well, what if if it's a little wet, if it's a little slippery, if they don't have the sticky pads down or whatnot, or they don't have a bar.
Yep.
You know, all that stuff comes into play that when you're younger, you know, and able-bodied, you may not even think about that kind
of thing. You know, those are the kinds of things we talked about. We remodeled our bathroom about a year ago and took out the bathtub and put in a walk-in shower. And I
love
that.
I love that, like, idea that there's no separation. People think, oh, well, it's going to get wet, but you just, it's how you make the drain, right? You just angle it a little bit so the water goes down.
It's workable. You can do it.
Yeah.
So the big message was, we're talking about intergenerational housing, houses that anyone could live in, and you can live in it, or you can, if you know, it's the resale value is high because families, it's appropriate for families or folks, older folks like us. One of the other things we talked about was home sharing, which is something that the AARP and the Commission on Aging have talked about a bit in Juneau, and the possibilities of home sharing with seniors who, and Deb will talk a little bit more about this, so I won't steal her thunder, but seniors where the family's all moved away and it's an older couple or an older single person living alone, and there's a great opportunity for home sharing there. So the whole idea of our workshop was to support people aging in the community and explore options. And we have a couple of AARP publications that I have available if people want to get a hold of me, and I can make those available. And they go into all these ideas of universal design, housing for all, anyway.
How do people reach you? Are you able to be reached through the Juneau Commission on Aging page, or do you want to give out something here online or on the phone?
So we're just updating our webpage, and the AARP age-friendly livability communities website is going to be linked our webpage so that you can slip right into that. It will look at our plan. It will give you the information about livable communities. It'll give you information about some of the recreation and wellness and things that are going on as well.
You know,
I wanted to make a point, too, that a lot of the things that we talked about, like lower thresholds, stair helpers, wider doors, hand bars in bathrooms. I mean, you can get hand bars for bathrooms that actually just attach to the wall.
Just stick, right?
Just stick right on there. Those are helpful for kids, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we talk about age-friendly, we're not just talking about seniors. We're talking about everybody in the family being safer and having an easier way of getting through their life by having some of these amenities for them.
The bathroom is like one of the most dangerous places in the house.
Yes, scary. And they usually make them really small. And that was one of the factors that came out, is that we're trying to make them bigger. You know, the other thing that came out of this workshop that I thought was super important was the idea of affordable middle-income housing. You know, a lot of communities focus on low-income housing or the really big, beautiful homes that are more expensive. But if you're in low-income, you need middle-income housing to move up to. And if you're a senior in a big house, you would like to downsize to middle-income housing. So one of the things that AARP talked a lot about was the, quote, missing middle, that middle-income housing component that offers an option for families, for seniors, for people just starting out, for people that want to move out of those big houses. Again, it's a way to think a little bit differently about how we can build the community for everybody in the community.
I love that.
Yep.
That's so cool.
And before Deb moves on to other things, I just want to mention, like I said, Scott Chambor from the Community Development Department was amazing with all of his information. And for people who are interested in the comprehensive plan update, the land use code update, housing and where development is and what's happening, there's an amazing housing library on the Community Development Department website at CBJ. Okay. And so all kinds of information there. And so I just encourage people to look there if you have any questions about housing in the city and borough and what's happening.
Great.
Yeah, and we're trying to not replicate the world on the Juneau Commission on Aging website. And so I encourage people to do exactly what Linda said. Go to the CBJ, look at some of their different departments, go to Parks and Rec and look at what's happening all over the city. If you don't have anything, if you claim you have nothing to do, you have not looked at the Parks and Rec website because there are tons of opportunities for contributing to the community or just engaging with the community on their website. And then on our website as well, we will be linking you to some of those other areas that we want to focus on.
Okay, just a couple more minutes left. What do you have
for
us?
Well, I think I think that pretty much covers
We
did a. You have been getting us more organized here so that we can push right through and make sure we get all of our information out there.
Well, that's fantastic. It's so good. You can always Google or put in your favorite search engine, the Juneau Commission on Aging. It'll take you right to the page. Everything we talked about is linked on there. The priorities that Deb mentioned, I'm sure follow-up from the Age Friendly Housing Seminar, all the different events that are coming up. In the month ahead or months ahead, because I think you mentioned a couple things in October as well.
Yeah.
And we look forward to talking to you next time as well. Linda Kruger, Deborah Craig, thank you so much.
Thank you, Boston. I forgot to mention that aging was so cool that everybody's doing
I was hoping
it.
You would say it this time.
And we're going to get out in the beautiful sunshine and go for it.
Yeah, get out there. Yeah, get out there in that beautiful sunshine. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon on KTOO. Here's a little Sounds Wild.
Sounds Wild. Hi, I'm Riley Woodford for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
A thunderstorm is rolling across the landscape of interior Alaska north of Fairbanks. Just a few days before the summer solstice in 2025, agencies watch and document thunderstorms like this, and this mid-June day is thunderstormy all across interior Alaska. The next day, the Alaska Interagency Coordination Center reports nearly 6,000 lightning strikes on that single day, and they report 111 wildfires are burning in the interior. Each year, lightning starts about 100 fires in Alaska and burns thousands of acres. The boreal forest has evolved to burn regularly, and boreal forest plants and animals have adapted to the effects of frequent fires. Shows like Bambi and Smokey Bear portray fire as a kind of monster, but fire is a natural part of the Alaska ecosystem. Unlike cartoon fires, wildland fires are not particularly fast-moving, and most animals escape fire. Bears and moose can easily outrun most fires, and birds can fly away. Smaller mammals can move to wet areas or hide underground. Smokey Bear's message to prevent forest fires is aimed at accidental, human-caused fires, like those near populated areas, which can threaten life and property. Natural fire in the boreal forest is necessary for habitat and wildlife diversity. For Sounds Wild, I'm Riley Woodford.
Hansen Gress, ka eat with the shu yi, we ka shuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta khanakaya ha anikak, gunish cheesh.
From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Mike Lane. Today is Thursday, September 4th, and on this day, all the way back in 1897, the steamer Queen was in Juneau's port, and on board was a passenger by the name of Professor John Muir. Professor Muir was a visitor to Gastineau Channel long before gold was discovered here. That's a look back at this day in 1897.
That's a little Mike Lane with On This Day. You can listen to Mike every morning on Morning Edition here on KTO between the hours of about 5:30 to 9. Catch him in those mornings, Monday through Friday. You are listening to Juneau Afternoon from Studio 2K, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson, right here at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Time once again for our check-in with the Juneau Public Libraries. And I have with me, as usual, Jen Gardner. Thank you so much, Jen. It's a pleasure to see you again. Welcome back. Wasiti, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
How was the rest of summer? Is summer over according to the library?
Well, summer reading is over. So okay. That is kind of signifying our transition into fall. We had our back to school event. We had our finale to summer reading. So I don't want to say summer is over because I want to get out of here and go enjoy the sunshine after this. But
it's teasing us.
In terms of programming, we are transitioning into fall at this point.
Okay, great. So yeah, let's run through it. What do we got coming up?
Yeah, so September is Library Card Sign-Up Month. That's across the nation.
Oh, okay.
And so for Library Card Sign-Up Month this year, we are trying to encourage folks who don't have a Juneau Public Libraries card to come in and get your card. It's free. It takes about 5 minutes. You just need an ID and proof of a Juneau address, like a piece of mail. And if you do sign up this month or bring a friend to sign up, you're going to get a free sticker designed by Crystal Whirl.
What?
It's a really cool design. I brought my magnet that has the same design on it. But it is lovely. It's designed by a local artist. And
are those magnets available too?
No. We just made the magnets to promote the stickers.
Oh, I see.
But you can come and get your sticker. So even if you do have a library card, find a friend or a family member who doesn't. Come and get your sticker for helping sign them up, and hopefully we'll get more people signed up for cards this month.
And I think that's also something to remind people about, and this is a good opportunity for that, is that your library card can get you physical items when you go to the library.
Sure.
But in this day and age of digital, there's so many ways to get books and other things on your phone or on your computer that you can check out using your library card, right?
Absolutely. So your library card gives you access to the Alaska Digital Library, and that is a collection of ebooks and audiobooks that are available for free to check out, just like a physical library book is. We also have ways that you can stream movies. There's several different databases that you can access to get all kinds of digital content all for free. And then in addition to that, if you want to do research, if you're looking for academic articles or ancestry or health information, there's all kinds of free databases accessible with your card as well. And then if you need to come and use the computers or the Wi-Fi, anyone can come into the library and use those. But if you have a card, it gets you 2 hours of public computer time. So
sweet.
That can be handy.
I think having a library card is a positive thing then.
We do too.
What else?
So as I mentioned, the summer reading program has come to an end.
How'd we do?
We did great. So this year we changed up our program a little bit to make one game for all ages. And that way, adults who wanted to participate on their own could, and also we could have families participate together. And so we got some really good feedback about that. All in all, we had 465 individuals and families register. So we had some families register all together.
Nice.
419 games were completed. And then the way that we tracked our reading this year, we gave people the option of tracking by time or by books. So either we read a total of over 2,000 hours or a total of about 4,200 books.
What?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It is pretty amazing. And then one person broke the record for total number of games completed. We had one kid who completed 19 games over the course of the summer.
Very
committed to the game.
Yeah.
Congratulations to them. If anyone is just dying to know what the theme is going to be for next year, it is Plant a Seed, Read. So if you're just super excited about summer reading, can't wait for next year, just keep that in the back of your mind that we'll be planting that seed for next year. I always like to mention summer reading would not be possible if not for the grant funding by the Institute of Museum and Library Services, as well as Friends of the Libraries.
Absolutely. Cool.
Another thing that we've got going on that just started today is our second annual library photo contest, which was so much fun last year. And so this is an all ages contest where individuals or families can submit 3 photos online on our website. The theme is Wild About Reading. And there's a few rules. You have to be a Juneau Public Libraries card holder. So if you aren't, go sign up and then you can
enter our contest. It's a perfect time to go get that card. Yeah.
Exactly. The photos have to be taken in the Juneau area within the last year and are previously unpublished. So if you want to read through all of the rules and submit your pictures, just go to juneau.org/library, and it's right on our homepage. You can submit up to 3 by October 3rd, and our winner is going to receive both a local gift card and also a professional print of their winning photo.
Oh, that's awesome. So it starts today, runs for a month basically through October 3rd. All ages can enter. Yep. You can find out more on the website too. Yep. That's kind of fun. What? How cool.
It was really fun last year, and just like last year, we are going to make a display of many of the entries that we get. So even if you aren't our winner, you'll be able to come and see a lot of the submissions that we received.
And the theme Wild About Reading seems to fit perfectly with our sort of outdoor lifestyle. There seems like you could do a lot with that in terms of creativity. Let your minds run free in terms of potential creativity.
We saw so much creativity last year, and some of the wonderful submissions we received were really showcasing the Juneau outdoors and reading, and there was just so much creativity. So we're hoping to foster that again.
That's cool. Okay. And then I see something about a bookmark contest.
Yeah. So the annual bookmark contest is also coming up. That begins on September 15th. We'll have entry forms at the Juneau Public Libraries, and then all of the school libraries will have the forms as well. This is a contest that's just for kids, so preschool through 12th graders. It's been going on for decades, and your entries are going to be due on October 15th.
And I think that's so fun. I'm sure a bunch of teachers at the schools go through and they help kiddos and teenagers make these. But it just also, like, bookmarks are so fascinating because they can be so creative, right?
Oh, yeah. We get so many interesting submissions each year. Yeah. And everybody loves looking at the posters at the end with all of the drawings.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. So if you got a kiddo out there who's in preschool to 12th grade, get them ready for that bookmark contest if they haven't already. Yeah.
And then one thing that's coming up this weekend is the food festival and farmers market outside of the Jack, and that's Saturday, September 6th. And Juneau Public Libraries is teaming up with the Juneau Cooperative Extension Program for a pressure canning 101 kind of Q&A. So this is an informal, not really class, but more of a chance to come stop by, get information, ask questions. You can get your pressure canner gauge checked. You can chat with Sarah from the Juneau Cooperative Extension Program and ask all of the questions you have about pressure canning. And this is going to be the first in a series of classes co-hosted by the libraries and Juneau Cooperative Extension. So this fall and winter, we'll be hosting classes at the libraries on selling homemade foods, preparing your pantry for times of scarcity, and pickling. But we're kicking it off with kind of this informal session about pressure canning, and the libraries will be bringing a bunch of books that you can check out. If you stop by the booth and you don't have a library card yet, you can also sign up for a library card.
Do it there on Saturday. Yeah, we talked with the Jack yesterday about this food festival and farmers market happening this Saturday. It's on the 6th, and I think it runs from 10 to 2 or something like that. And then this pressure canning thing is, do you know what time this is at?
It'll be at the same time.
Okay. Yeah, they're going to be constantly going, basically.
Yeah. It'll be kind of a come by, come chat with us, come check out books. Yeah. I think one thing that we do really well at the library is books about food.
Yeah.
We have so many cookbooks, so many books about preparing foods. So we just have a plethora of amazing resources on canning and preserving things.
Beyond, this is just a side question, but beyond the amazing bookstore, which is the Friends of the Library out in the Valley, where a lot of people donate their books. Does the library also take book donations?
We tend to direct people to Friends of the Library. Okay. We can take a couple of things if somebody has, you know, a handful of books that they want to leave. But we do tend to funnel most of the donations to the Friends of the Library amazing bookstore just because they have a lot more capacity to take things.
Gotcha.
If it's something that's like brand new and you think, you know, it might be of interest for the library to add to the collection, we'll definitely take a look at it. The things that we aren't able to keep, we do just pass on to the amazing bookstore. So
I was just thinking of people might have like some really cool cool cookbook is not that well known that, you know, maybe they're done with or something that they might want to donate.
You can always check with us. Yeah. And again, if it's something that we can't use, we pass it on and it still supports the library.
Yeah, because the Amazing Bookstore is awesome. Okay, what else is going on?
The last thing that I wanted to mention is that we do have a clothing swap coming up at the Valley Library. This is a community-led event that's been going on during the last year, about once a month or so. Mm-hmm. This is going to be on Sunday, September 14th from 12 to 2 in the Valley Library Large Meeting Room. So everyone is welcome to this. You can bring clothes to share or come empty-handed, but plan to take home lots. any usable leftover clothes will be either donated or saved for the next clothing swap. And we do have some rules for this event. We're only going to be accepting adult women's clothing due to the space constraints. There is going to be a drop-off limit of 10 items per person, and we'll have volunteers that look through the clothes and just make sure that everything is in good condition. And that's just to make sure that this is a manageable event for the volunteers who are leading it and to decrease the amount of waste that comes from the event. So this has been a really popular event in the past, and we're grateful to the volunteers who are leading this and continuing to put it on, because it's one of the few places where clothing donations can kind of come and go freely in the community right now.
I love a clothing swap. And that is that information on the website too?
That is on our Facebook page. We have a Facebook event, and then it's also on our calendar on our library website.
Okay, so the Juno Library's Facebook page and or juno.org/library. Final question for you, Jen. What are you reading right now?
I wondered if you were going to ask me that. I am reading the Murderbot series by Martha Wells.
Oh, is that the one that the show is based on?
Yes, I haven't seen the show yet, but I've been listening to the audiobooks, and they are really fun. if you have ever wanted to read like a nice, fun little like novella romp from the perspective of a rogue robot.
Right.
This is your chance.
That's your chance. And I know the show, I think it stars Alexander Sarsgaard.
Yeah.
And it was on this summer, I think, or something. But it's always nice to read the books first, then watch the program.
And so, I highly recommend the audiobook. I'm a huge audiobook fan, so I'm listening to it on audio CD. But you can also look for audiobooks on the Libby app using your library card through the Alaska Digital Library.
Libby app is awesome. Get your library card this month. It's sign-up month. You get a free sticker from Crystal Whirl. And it looks beautiful. That's amazing. And then you can even turn it into your own magnet if you want to, because I like a good magnet. Thanks, Jen, so much for being here today. Gwyneth Cheese, we'll see you next month.
Thank you.
That's going to do it for today's Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, a chat with the cast from the first show of Perseverance Theater season, What the Constitution Means to Me. Plus, comedian Brooks Whelan is back in Juno, and Garden Talk. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTO Juno 104.3. And KAUK, Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Hello, out the road. You can find the show online at kto.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer feedback or suggestions, or find out how to be a guest on the show. You can also find live stream archives on KTO's YouTube page. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Programming support for Juno Afternoon comes from listeners and viewers like you and Alaska Airlines Club 49, Hanson Gress, and Heritage Coffee Roasting Company. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Lisa Purvis. Gwyneth Cheesh, enjoy the weather.